Hello, sagaists, burrowers, and venerators of the past and present. Here we are. It's the beginning of yet another week of the pandemic, and we are so grateful to be inspired week in and week out by writers and writing and prose and word choice and story. We marvel at what writers live through in order to bring their truths to the page, honestly, and we honor the amazing bravery and hard work that goes into creating works of literature and art that always starts, no matter what, as little seeds of possibility. And in this way, anyone who's ever written a book has something in common with everyone else who's ever written a book, and somehow that brings me some measure of comfort. So anyway, I'm Brooke Warner, and with me is my ever-comforting co-host, Grant Faulkner. And that's true, Grant. It's not just a good segue. I would not do this without you.
Oh, thanks, Brooke. And I appreciate that. And I wouldn't do this without you either, because it would be so awkward to do this banter with myself. And I wouldn't have very many profound things to say about memoir.
Totally. You'd have a podcast about fiction and I'd have a podcast about memoir, and then they'd go toe to toe and maybe it would be like dueling pianos.
Yeah. In fact, we should do a special dueling pianos episode, I think.
All right. Well, we digress, but maybe not really, maybe not ever, because, well, seeds. You know, we're talking about seeds on this week's episode, in a sense, because if you think about it, all families start with a seed, literally and metaphorically. And today's guest is Gabriela Garcia, who's very lucky to share a namesake with the incredible Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who is another writer who wrote epically, and specifically who wrote multi-generational family sagas. And so, unlike 100 Years of Solitude, which is 420 pages, Gabriela's epic multi-generational novel of Women in Salt is only 210 pages, so half the length. And yet, wow, she really did not leave me wanting more. It was really impressive. I really loved it. And in reading the book, I also realized how much I love multi-generational stories in general. They're so satisfying, how they intertwine and how you get to track this lineage of characters and how one generation always informs the next. So to lob a question your way, Grant, any multi-generational novels come to mind that you've loved or that have stayed with you over the years, and why?
Yeah, there's 100 Years of Solitude, which you just mentioned, which might just be the best one to note. And then I'm thinking of two other recent novels as well. One is Salt Houses, which is by Hala Alyan. And it's a really powerful and poetic multi-generational story about displacement. And I think that's why I like it. I'm just very intrigued by the theme of displacement. And the novel starts in Palestine in 1963 and branches into Jordan, Kuwait, Beirut, Paris, and Boston. And then there's the I'll call this a contemporary classic because I hear it referred to so often and it had so many great reviews and readers, Homegoing by Yah Ghassi, which explores the damaging effect of the slave trade on a family split between the U.S. and the Gold Coast of Ghana across 200 years. And the novel follows two sisters who grew up in different 17th century Ghanaian villages and traces both women's families for the next few centuries as they navigate both sides of the Atlantic. And I guess thinking about multi-generational novels, one of the characteristics that intrigues me is that they have to explore a trauma that really influences the next generation and the next generation after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that absolutely is a telling trademark, perhaps, of these mm-hmm. kinds of books. And I was thinking about how much I was struck by Jeffrey Eugenides' Middlesex, which I read years ago and has stayed with me all of these years later. We actually have a relatively new book out on the She Writes list called How to Make a Life by Florence Kraut that explores family secrets, betrayals, and mistakes. And so many of those things are happening in the name of love and for survival. And in this case, it's a story of a mother and daughter who flee a catastrophic pogrom in the Ukraine for America in the early 20th century. And in doing so, of course, like so many immigrants, they believe they're going to ensure the future of their children and grandchildren, and they'll be safe from harm. But life is more complicated than that, of course. Grant, I'm thinking about NaNoWriMo, and, you know, probably a lot of people are interested in tackling the multi-generational story. Of course, it's not easy to do a shitty first draft of this kind of book. I have the impression that it requires a lot of structuring and forethought to consider all the interconnections of characters and how one person's experiences and decisions are going to impact their daughters and sons. And Gabriella does this like really well. She has an interesting structure because there's another family in the mix. And in that way, I also thought it was very unique. The other family is just a mother and a daughter. And they're juxtaposed against this other multilinear, you know, like four generations of women. Yeah, I was just really intrigued with it. And I was thinking about the fact that all of the books that I've read that have been these multi-generational stories have been by immigrants or children of immigrants. In the case of Marquez, of course, he's an international writer. But it just makes me wonder about the ways in which immigrants and children of immigrants keep their family stories close and how we're prone to losing that through the generations. And so I'm curious if you think there's something to that.
Yeah, when you first mentioned multi-generational stories, I thought how I've never even thought about writing one, which intrigued me. And perhaps the reason for that is I'm somewhat out of touch with my ancestors' stories because they came to this country so long ago. I'm not in touch with their drama or their struggle or their displacement or their conflicts of identity. And it hasn't had a role in shaping me really in any tangible way. So maybe that's why I focus on writing about the present for the most part. I love these moments of realization, though, to think about how our stories might be shaped by factors that are outside of our control.
Yeah, honestly, I hadn't really considered the idea until now either. And it does make a lot of sense. You know, mm-hmm. your connection or your disconnection from the past is obviously going to inform the kind of story that you're moved to tell. So I'm looking forward to asking Gabriella this particular question and hearing more from her. And we get to do exactly that after this very short interlude. Welcome back, everybody. We're so pleased to welcome Gabriella Garcia, who is the author of the new novel Of Women and Salt. Her fiction and poems have been widely published in Best American Poetry, Tin House, Zizova, Black Warrior Review, and elsewhere. She received a Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award, a Steinbeck Fellowship, and multiple prestigious residencies and fellowships. And she has an MFA in fiction from Purdue, where she has also taught creative writing. Gabriella is the daughter of immigrants from Cuba and Mexico and currently resides in the Bay Area. Welcome, Gabriella. We're so happy to have you on the show.
So happy to be here.
Your debut novel Of Women and Salt has a very satisfying structure. You know, there's so much attention to detail across multiple generations. And at the same time, it struck me that it's not a very long book. 210 some pages as opposed to a lot of these other epic novels that are similar that can often be double that length. So can you talk about how you managed to do this? How did you manage to pack such a punch and so much story into such a compact book?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that people have called it like a saga or a historical saga because it is such a short work. And I think when I was conceiving of the novel, I was thinking about it not necessarily as a saga, as something that I wanted to like build in all of this character backstory thoroughly and go through all of these generations of the family. The novel sort of, it skips over a generation. It, you know, offers these two sort of historical glimpses, but is mostly set in contemporary times. And I think I was really interested in playing with structure and thinking about spaces of unknowing where, you know, questions could live. You know, I didn't want to sort of give everything, all of the backstory. I wanted there to be sort of just space of contemplation between the way some of these chapters function. And I sort of knew that I wanted to write something that wasn't a sort of linear structure. I knew that I wanted to play a lot with style and tone. I wanted, you know, every chapter to sort of radically shift in terms of point of view, in terms of the sounds and the rhythms and the voice in each chapter. So I was really sort of just experimenting a lot with structure while I was writing it.
That's so interesting, Gabriela, because I was struck by, you know, while reading it, of course, it brought up other Latinx writers who've written multi-generational tales, including, you know, Garcia Marquez and Isabella Allende and Cristina Garcia and others. And I was curious if you came to the work with any sense of legacy, or I guess, you know, per what you just said, of redefining a multi-generational tale while writing it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly those are all, you know, books and authors I admire. You know, I was sort of thinking a lot about authors who really sort of seem to be able to write in like radically different styles, you know, or radically different voices. Like, I love the feeling of sort of reading one story by an author that sounds like it could have just been written by a totally different author than another story, but they're both like in the same collection. I love that feeling, and I've always admired writers who can do that. And so I think more than anything, that's sort of what I was thinking about. You know, I wanted to challenge myself to write in modes sometimes that aren't my most natural modes of writing. Like, for example, I don't really write a lot of historical fiction. So those chapters felt like a challenge to me.
Well, and as a first-generation daughter of Cuban and Mexican immigrants, I read that you grew up questioning what it means to both be here and there, to belong and to be a foreigner. I'm curious if you think of the multi-generational novel as a form, you know, if it's one that attracts immigrants and children of immigrants. It just struck me that all of the ones I've read have been by children of immigrants. And I was thinking about how you might hold your family history closer to your consciousness in some ways, and whether that's true for you.
That's interesting to think about. I mean, I think it's probably true for a lot of children of immigrants that you sort of thinking a lot about, you know, the past and the sort of movement across geographies. And so maybe that lends itself to that form. You know, I don't know if it was so much in the form for me as in, I think I sort of wanted to also disrupt some of those ideas of what it, of that, you know, it feels almost like a cliche nowadays to like feel like you belong and don't belong, or like live in these, in the margins. And I wanted to explore also some of the power structures that exist within those configurations, you know, so like the character of Jeanette, who's a Cuban American daughter of immigrants, sort of goes to Cuba expecting to sort of find some kind of answers about herself, or has this sort of romanticized idea of what going to her mother's home country is going to mean for her. That sort of comes up against some of what she finds there and her experiences with actual Cubans living on the island. So I was interested in sort of exploring a lot of those tensions.
Well, Gabriela, you were profiled recently by the LA Times, and there's a quote from you in which you say that Latinx identity is not a monolith. And I think that comes through so explicitly in your book. You write about so many variations of the Latinx experience, and one of the women who's El Salvadorian is rounded up and detained. So I was wondering if you can say why it was important to show this experience in the book juxtaposed against the more privileged experience of Carmen from Cuba.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly those sort of intra-community tensions are something that I've thought a lot about. As you said, I'm the daughter of a Cuban immigrant and a Mexican immigrant, and both of those communities have had very different immigration experiences in the U.S. Cubans for a long time were very privileged in terms of just sort of touching U.S. ground and being on a path to citizenship and, you know, receiving certain resources. And Mexicans had a much harder and long route towards those things. And my father didn't become a citizen until I was like in my 20s. So, you know, I think I was always just really aware of the sort of flattening of identity that happens under a label like Latinx that encompasses so many different groups of people from so many different countries and cultures. And so, you know, I wanted to write about Miami in a way that was sort of true to my experience of Miami, which was all of these sort of tensions that exist along racial lines, along class lines. And so you see a little bit of that in the very different stories of Carmen's family and Gloria's family in Miami.
Yeah, that was something I actually really appreciated about the book, was just the vast differences in the women's experience and of women in SALT. Obviously, is very focused on the women. It's matrilinear, and there are men in the book, but they're not really part of the story, or at least they're not driving the story. Other than, of course, there's people have to read it because there's a couple of choices that the women make that are either impacted by, or you know, the men are sort of driving those decisions in a sort of passive way, in one case, very brutally so. But I was curious if you could talk about centering women in your fiction. And is that just an easy choice for you? You know, is it always what you've done, or does it require some degree of discipline in your storytelling?
I think I've always centered women in almost all of my writing. I mean, and I knew that in this novel, I wanted the focus to be on women. And it's, you know, very, very apparent from the very beginning, where there's like a matrilineal family tree just focused on the women, and all of the voices in the novel belong to the women. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, men do show up, but they're always sort of at the periphery. And I think, you know, I grew up in a very matrilineal family. My mother was a single mother, and she had a sister. My grandmother had all sisters. I have all sisters. A lot of the women in my family were single mothers. And I never felt a lack in that. You know, I felt like there was this support structure of women helping women. And I think that shaped a lot of how I think about family, you know. And that's something that I sort of hoped came through in the novel, was the way that these women sort of interact and support each other, and sometimes also hurt each other, but just the complexities of those relationships between women, which I'm always super interested in.
Well, Gabriella, you received a couple of very prestigious literary awards, the Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award and a Steinbeck Fellowship from San Jose University. And so I was wondering if you might share with us what these kinds of experiences opened up for you, and maybe more broadly, what they open up for writers generally. I was really moved by a statement that you wrote, where you said, "I am indebted to the women writers who carved a path so that my own voice could find an audience. And I am indebted to the mentors who opened doors I didn't even know existed or didn't dare dream could open before me." And I thought it might be a great way to end, to talk about mentors and opportunities and champions, and, you know, what this means to you as a debut author with this highly anticipated book.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I feel like pretending that I've done any of this by myself, or that this book was just, you know, came into existence by my own labor only, is just not true. You know, so many people have both paved a way for me and also just supported my writing in really tangible ways financially and giving me time, like those fellowships that you mentioned. And then also, you know, I've been really, really lucky to have some very, very incredible mentors, and other, you know, published authors who came before me. You know, one of the things, just one tangible way, like sort of coming into the publishing world, that's something that I never learned about in my MFA program or in any of my like sort of formal schooling. We didn't really talk about the publishing process. Everything I've ever learned has been from authors who came before me, who've shared information and resources. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about now that I'm a published author is thinking about mentorship and the next sort of universe of writers who I can support, you know? And I think ultimately, you know, exactly what you said, I just feel very in debt to all of the people who have supported my writing.
Well, we wish you so much luck with this book, and it's beautiful. And I know it's already getting a lot of attention, and we just wish you all the success.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gabriella.
Thanks.
We will be right back with today's book talk.
For today's book pick, I picked one of our former guests' novels. It's Carolina de Robertis, who wrote Invisible Mountain, and it's her 2009 novel, her first novel, set in Uruguay, and it's a stunning multi-generational tale. It tackles the lives of three mothers and daughters, and it's told over 90 years, starting in 1900. And like so much of Carolina's work, Invisible Mountain celebrates Uruguay's spirit and the will to survive in desperate circumstances. And just as we were talking about earlier, you know, all of these things that people bring with them through the generations, Carolina does such an amazing job of writing about Uruguay and about the experience of women in particular. So many of her books center on women, just like Gabriela, which was what made me think of Carolina in the first place. Carolina has many books. So the fact that this is her first novel, I just thought what a good opportunity to celebrate it and to celebrate her and to remind you all to go back and check out that archived episode because she is amazing.
She is amazing. She's also written a novel during NaNoWriMo, and that episode is super amazing. So I'm glad you alerted listeners to it. And listeners, we are so thankful for you. I want to read one of the fantastic reviews that I saw on the Apple Podcast channel. And I want to say I was just having a bad day, and I went to look for good reviews just to feel better. And you guys delivered. So thank you so much. This comes from Creaky Old Floor Club member, who says, Grant and Brooke answer so many of my questions about writing and the publishing journey. Not only do they give me answers, they show me that there are so many more questions that I should be asking. This is the perfect writing community, and you can meet whenever you want. Thank you, Grant and Brooke. Thank you. And thank you for saying that, you know, mentioning that this is a writing community and that you can meet whenever you want. I mean, that's just what we want to be. So check us out every week. Download it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And we love those reviews, especially when I'm down on a late afternoon. So please, please give us a little rating if you can. We'll see you next week.